This episode is sponsored by our global research partners. Want to contribute to the advancement of medicine? Make some easy money while sharing your thoughts with market research surveys. Learn more and sign up using the special TFOC link on our website and in the description box below.
Hey friends, this episode of The Fellow on Call is not meant to be used for medical advice and is intended for educational purposes only. Patient information has been modified to ensure privacy. The views expressed in this episode do not necessarily reflect the views of our employers. Enjoy!
Welcome to another episode of The Fellow on Call, the Hemong Podcast. We're coming at you from Relo University Medical Center. I'm Ronak.
I'm Vivek.
And I'm Dan.
And in today's episode, we kick off a new series, this time talking all about follicular lymphoma.
This is going to be a good one. Really excited about it. You know, this is actually one of the most challenging lymphomas to treat. The patient comes in, you're like, it's follicular lymphoma, indolent. It's very complicated. You know, these relapses happen, and it's what do I do when they relapse? It's not a one-size-fits-all. So really excited to get into the intro episode and then all of the details to the next episodes.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of these middle categories, right? Like, it's easy to know what to do with a lymphoma that's indolent. There's some that are indolent, there's some that are aggressive, and then there's follicular. So glad that we're doing this. It's going to be a great series.
And just for what it's worth, when I was a fellow at Relo, I learned a lot about the fundamentals of all this from Vivek. So I'm really glad that he is going to be a big part of this series, as he is with every series, but walking us through how he thinks about follicular, it helped me immensely, and I'm sure it'll help all of you as well. So without further ado, let's roll that show. Guys, I know you did the last episode without me. I am back from my trip. What is going on? What's been new? I'm sure, Dan, you're probably deep into basketball right now. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, Logan asks every night, is it over yet? And I keep telling him, nope, it's going to be over in June. Sorry, you're in it for
the haul. It's a good playoffs, though. It's a good playoffs.
It is. It's been an extraordinary playoffs. If he liked basketball at all, he would be super excited. It's one of the best postseasons I've seen in a while. Warriors notwithstanding.
Yeah, I mean, Luka, LeBron go down from Ant-Man. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. It's perfect, you know? Everyone loves Anthony. How do you not like Anthony Edwards, you know?
And honestly, just the whole, every series so far that the Nuggets have been involved in has just been outstanding. The Clips series, this OKC series has 7 written all over it. I can't express how excited I am.
Joker is just, he's playing out of his mind per usual. I mean, it's such an interesting, he's coaching the team too. It's not only that, he's just sitting there literally coaching the team and then snags like 30, 20, and 10 or something, you know, every game. It's insane.
A superhero, yes.
I may have to check this out myself because I'm running out of things to watch. Basketball
Ronak,
wasn't
you have
in
to
the,
watch this.
I know basketball wasn't in the bingo cards for 2025, but you know, the year is still young. Maybe this will be my year. Guys, you know, I want to get you guys back to basketball. There's probably a game on right now. I actually don't know. Dan says there is. So, you know, let's keep rolling with our show so you guys can get back to the fun stuff tonight. We are starting a new series, this time talking all about follicular lymphoma, another important heme malignancy. And as we have been doing with other heme malignancies, understanding sort of the fundamentals of how to approach these diseases, key markers, things like that are going to be super important, not only for understanding this disease, but being able to distinguish this disease from others for real life purposes and also for boards purposes. So Vivek, do you want to kick us off with a case for our intro episode?
Yeah, so this is a patient I've seen in clinic, actually. So we have an 80-year-old healthy male who presents with a 6-month history of progressive right cervical adenopathy. He's asymptomatic and golfs regularly without any decrease in his energy level. So he's just like, look, man, I'm golfing, had this lymph node thing come up. He was evaluated by ENT, who performed an FNA, which was notable for a monotypic CD10 positive B cell population on flow cytometry that was concerning for a B cell lymphoma. So before we get into more details on follicular lymphoma, let's revisit the discussion of FNA versus core biopsy versus excisional biopsy. We've talked about this a lot in other series. There's never enough. We should always come back to this because it's really critically important. For lymphoma, we always talk about the excisional biopsy as the gold standard. So can one of you go through when each of these may be appropriate and adequate for our patients?
Yeah, so definitely check out our HemePath series, and we reference it a lot, and it's from when we first launched the podcast. Also check out Cancer of Unknown Primary and our DLBCL series, where we kind of discuss some of this too. But the thing to keep in mind is that carcinoma, solid tumors, can be diagnosed with an FNA, with a fine needle aspiration. So it's very reasonable in patients with neck adenopathy where there is a solid tumor entity on the differential. Like maybe it's a SCC of the head, a squamous cell carcinoma, like head and neck. You can start with an FNA there. That's reasonable. It's something that we can get quickly, often same day in clinic, just under either ultrasound guidance or with pathology doing it. That's when I think of FNA as being a great tool. Oftentimes also, if patients are getting bronchoscopy with a biopsy, that's essentially an FNA. You don't want to be putting a big old hole in the side of a airway. And so basically the deal with this is that you get a small number of cells, a small sample of cells to analyze under a microscope. We don't think of this as being particularly helpful all the time with lymphoma and particularly determining the subtype of lymphoma because you really want to see those cells in context. You want to see the histologic structure of the lymph node architecture, as we often call it. The bottom line with FNA, we're basically looking at the phenotype of the cells. Is this a lymphocyte? You know, is this a carcinoma type epithelial cell? We're looking at morphology largely to tell what the cells look like. And we can also perform IHC on those cells that we collect to determine what proteins are expressed on the outside of them. That can sort of also help us subtype these cells. Because these cells are in suspension, we can run flow cytometry as well. So if we're thinking that these look like lymphocytes and we want to further characterize that with flow, we can do that as well. For lymphoma, if that's the primary thing on the differential, core biopsy is less invasive than excisional and can sometimes be adequate for diagnosis because you do get some picture of the lymph node architecture. If you get a biopsy with large B-cell lymphoma, that's often enough to tell you how to move forward, especially if there's enough material to run FISH to evaluate for rearrangements in MYC, BCL2, BCL6. For indolent lymphomas like follicular, it can be adequate in the right clinical context, but you may miss an area of underlying transformation or higher grade component that changes how you think about the disease and how you end up managing the disease. We'll talk about that in this episode as well. For things like Hodgkin lymphoma, there are very few of those malignant Reed-Sternberg cells, remember the owl eye cells from step one, and they're sort of embedded in this dense inflammatory infiltrate. So you may not be able to establish a definitive diagnosis with a core sample alone, just not sampling enough to catch these rare cells. But sometimes you do start with a core biopsy, especially if there isn't a great site for excisional, like in the mediastinum or mesenteric area. As we've been referencing in all of these things we've just been talking about, excisional biopsy really is ideal because you get the full lymph node, you get to examine all the different regions of it, look for areas that might be higher grade, and you always have enough tissue to send some off for ancillary studies, your genetic studies and things like that. So just remember, if there is concern for lymphoma or lymphoma is high on differential, we don't want to send that sample in preservative and formalin because we won't be able to run flow cytometry. The cells are fixed and they have to be suspended in a buffer that allows the cells to remain somewhat alive. And RPMI is kind of what we use most of the time. So keep that in mind. You have to let your pathologist know that lymphoma is something you're thinking about and that you want flow cytometry to make sure that it gets sent in the right thing.
Yeah, Dan, that's really important. And, you know, I was just on inpatient service on consults. We had a patient with a type B lactic acidosis, this liver full of lymphoma was our clinical suspicion, went to IR to get the biopsy, and one of our amazing fellows contacted IR to let them know we're thinking about lymphoma and sent it to the right spot, made sure it wasn't informal. And so that's really important. We want to make everybody understand this because sometimes you got to pick up the phone and talk to the proceduralist, tell them what you're thinking about because they can't read your mind. And so that's really, really important. So for this patient, flow cytometry was run on the FNA, and again, that showed that CD10 positive monotypic B-cell population. There was no increase in forward scatter. So what should be on the differential for that immunophenotype of the CD10 positive B-cell population with no forward increased scatter?
So CD10 positivity indicates that this is likely a germinal center origin lymphoma and allows us to formulate an early differential diagnosis. This differential isn't perfect, but it can help sort of in these more complicated cases. So whenever we think about things relating to the germinal center origin, so that CD10 positive, we want to consider follicular lymphoma, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, and Burkitt lymphoma. So again, CD10 positive, follicular, DLBCL, and Burkitt. Also remember that increased forward scatter on flow cytometry indicates a large size of cells. In lymphoma, we typically think of larger cells as more aggressive. This isn't always true, though, as Burkitt lymphoma characteristically has medium-sized cells. But in general, think large cells for increased forward scatter. And in the end, though, we do need more tissue to make a diagnosis. A few atypical cells isn't really diagnostic, and we need to evaluate for effacement of lymph node architecture to make a true definitive diagnosis of lymphoma in a situation like this.
Let's take a moment to learn more about the sponsor for today's episode. Imagine there was a way you could use your expertise as a healthcare professional to contribute to medicine, to improve the patient experience, and help impact the development of new drugs and devices, all while making some extra money.
We have the solution. Market research surveys through our partners, M3 Global Research, All Global Circle, and M-Panels. Through their easily accessible and secure platforms, you can complete market surveys on your own time. It's the perfect way to make some extra money while making a difference. It's so easy, and we couldn't recommend it more.
To learn more and to sign up, use the special TFOC link on our website, thefellowoncall.com, and in the description box below.
That's really great. So now we've got our differential. We're thinking maybe this is follicular, maybe this is large cell. In the back of our head, we're thinking about that Burkitt situation. Again, those patients tend to be a lot sicker and have symptoms. Before he presented to us in clinic, actually, ENT had discussed with him, hey, I think you need an excisional lymph node biopsy. He didn't want to undergo surgery and instead actually preferred a core biopsy. So he had an ultrasound-guided core biopsy done, which showed a monotypic CD10 positive, CD19 positive, and CD20 positive small B-cell population in a follicular pattern without increased forward scatter and no significant increase in centroblasts. This was consistent on the pathology report. This is what it said. It said this was consistent with classic follicular lymphoma per WHO 5th edition. On the pathology report, there was also a comment that this could be known as grade 2 follicular lymphoma per WHO 4th edition. So this is really important. What's the deal with the grade of lymphoma and how has classification for follicular lymphoma changed?
You know what we're going to say here, right? It's very important that we understand the historical context. It's the long call. You can't get away without a little history, right? You are going to see things like grade 1, 2, 3A, and 3B reported in studies that look at follicular lymphoma. And prior to the WHO classification in 2022, there were grades used in this pathologic classification for follicular. Follicular lymphoma, generally speaking, is characterized by a follicular pattern for germinal center neoplastic cells, which were either centrocytes or centroblasts. The number of centroblasts helped inform the grade, where greater than 15 centroblasts was grade 3A, and confluent sheets of centroblasts was grade 3B. These criteria were established in the 1980s and 1990s prior to rituximab and effective targeted therapies for these cancers. Ultimately, it was found that grades 1 through 3A follicular lymphoma behaved really similarly and warranted one treatment algorithm, but grade 3B behaved more like an aggressive large B cell lymphoma, requiring more intensive chemotherapy with a regimen like R-CHOP. To make things easier, the WHO updated classification into these two major buckets. Classical follicular lymphoma, which includes grades 1 through 3A because they have the same prognosis and treatment, and follicular large B-cell lymphoma, which previously was referred to as grade 3B because, again, this behaves like a large B-cell lymphoma and it should be treated like one with R-CHOP.
I assume that with these classification systems, it's not really this simplistic. So out of curiosity, what are some less common subtypes of follicular lymphoma in the WHO 5th edition?
It's important because you'll see some of these things. And really, I want to reiterate what Dan said. The idea is let's make this a lot easier. When you give R-CHOP, you think large B-cell lymphoma, so just have it in the name, follicular large B-cell lymphoma. Let's not get confused with 3A, 3B. Let's not over-treat the 3As with R-CHOP and under-treat the 3Bs. Let's make it simple. So that was great. There's also a subtype called predominantly diffuse follicular lymphoma, which should not be confused with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. This often presents with early stage disease in the inguinal region. It's very different. It's important to know that in most follicular lymphoma patients, there's a classic translocation of 1418 involving BCL2. And these predominantly diffuse follicular lymphomas lack that rearrangement. And that's what makes them distinguished from the classic follicular lymphoma. However, we don't really necessarily change our treatment algorithm when we see that. So don't get fooled by diffuse pattern, thinking that this is a diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. And that's very important. The other thing that's important is to remember that BCL2 rearrangements are very common in follicular lymphomas. This will come up later when we get to different parts of this episode, particularly when we talk about transformation. Another subtype you might see is primary cutaneous follicle center lymphoma, which has a really favorable prognosis. These cutaneous B-cell lymphomas have a very favorable prognosis treated with localized radiation therapy, or if in multiple areas, maybe single agent rituximab. These patients do quite well. And there are other more rare subtypes that you can read about. We'll link it to our show notes. But the thing we really wanted to take away from this is that if you see diffuse pattern of follicular lymphoma, that is not necessarily grade 3B, right? You'll see follicular large B-cell lymphoma when you need to use R-CHOP and these updated classifications. It's a challenge in the community sometimes because you may not have the same pathologic classifications. I will say, though, the referrals that I've been getting, pathologists have really updated the way they write these, even in community-based settings. So I really do think that these criteria are great, and it makes it just much more simplified in knowing how to treat these patients.
All right. So great. I love that. Great summary. Back to our case. We have this healthy 80-year-old guy who just wants to get back to the golf course. He has this palpable right cervical adenopathy, but no other palpable nodes in his axillary inguinal regions. What are our next steps? What do we want to do to work this guy up?
So in general, when you have a patient with lymphoma, you always want to obtain the following. So first and foremost, you need that CBC, as significant cytopenias will really make you concerned that there may be some marrow involvement here. You want to get a CMP. You're trying to assess for organ function, normal liver and renal function especially. LDH is really, really important because we use this for prognostic purposes. For instance, if it's very high, let's say in the 400 range, then you would be more concerned for transformation to a large B-cell lymphoma as opposed to if the LDH was a little bit lower. You want to get a uric acid and a phosphorus to evaluate for tumor lysis syndrome. Remember, some of these diseases can be quite bulky, right? There's a lot of cells turning over, and you want to be sure that you're evaluating for that. This is not always common in follicular, and if you do start to see some elevations here or some changes, you may be worried about transformation if it's present. You also want to get hepatitis B panels because, as we've sort of been alluding to, a lot of our treatment modalities may include the use of rituximab, which we know has the possibility of reactivating a prior hepatitis B infection. And if they do end up being hepatitis B positive, they will need antiviral prophylaxis if the core antibody is positive because of that risk of reactivation that I just mentioned. While we're at it, we always want to check hepatitis C and HIV serologies, again, because these diseases can increase the likelihood of a lymphoma developing. And then getting that good old PET CT to evaluate for the extent of the disease. In this particular case that we discussed, the PET CT staging will be incredibly informative. And I believe we've talked about this before, but you may hear something known as the Ann Arbor staging or the Lugano staging. Ann Arbor staging is the older and more outdated system that was developed prior to the advent of the PET CT. With the introduction of the PET CT, approximately 30% of patients with lymphoma were upstaged compared to CT imaging. And so the story behind this is that a group actually met in Lugano, Switzerland in 2007 to develop the Lugano staging. And the key point that they were trying to achieve was that they were trying to recognize grouping patients in either earlier versus advanced disease. And the reason for all of this is because this has implications in treatment. And we will go through this in a lot more detail in our next few episodes. But just at high level, stage one or two is early stage. So these are patients with single nodal group or single extranodal sites. For example, if somebody had a chin lymphoma, this would be a stage one. Multiple nodes on the same side of the diaphragm is stage two. So again, stage one and stage two is early stage. Stage three and stage four are our advanced stages. Nodes above and below the diaphragm is stage four. And diffuse involvement in one or more extranodal sites. So this includes things like the liver, lung, or the bone or the bone marrow would then upstage that patient to be stage four. You don't need to perform a bone marrow biopsy in staging as it doesn't really change our management in most cases of follicular lymphoma. And a lack of marrow avidity on that PET CT has a very good negative predictive value. So we can spare our patients a procedure. Even though the NCCN lists a bone marrow biopsy, you don't need to routinely perform a bone marrow biopsy on patients with lymphoma if you are obtaining that PET CT for staging.
Ronak, I think that's really, really important. We see a lot of these patients. they come in and everyone's getting a bone marrow biopsy, but it doesn't really change any, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, there's follicular lymphoma in there. We actually think that that BCL2 rearrangement that's happening might actually happen at the level of the bone marrow. And it's unclear exactly where this is going on, but it's not uncommon to see some follicular lymphoma in there. It doesn't necessarily change your management. And so by just doing bone marrow biopsies because it's listed, you don't need to necessarily do that. And the Lugano criteria and the Lugano meeting really established PET CT as a way to figure that out. And so that's why PET CT is the way to go. It can rule out that bone marrow involvement. So our patient had a PET CT, which showed mildly avid adenopathy and two right cervical nodes, with the largest measuring 1.5 centimeters. The SUV was noted at 5.5. Before we get into the decision point here, right, which is, do we need to get further biopsy information? We only got a core. Can we rule out that there's not a component of large cell transformation? What about follicular large B-cell lymphoma? Is this enough to really get our diagnosis? So can one of you go through the natural history of follicular lymphoma, and how does that help determine whether an excision is needed?
Follicular lymphoma, it's important to understand, it's often incurable. It does have this relapsing and remitting course requiring multiple lines of therapy, honestly, over a decade or more most of the time. That's sort of the rub with indolent lymphomas, right? Like we can suppress them with treatment, and it has this very long clinical course, but ultimately many of them, including follicular, are often incurable. Patients overall have a favorable prognosis. The median overall survival is over 20 years in most cases. There are a subset of follicular lymphoma patients who will never need treatment, and a subset who will have a very aggressive course. There is some data that patients with localized disease could be cured with radiation therapy alone. So that's sort of an important exception to the sort of incurable nature of many of these indolent lymphomas. At any time, that underlying follicular lymphoma can pick up additional mutations and transform into a diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. And so repeat biopsies are critical because, remember, they already have BCL2. They already have that one rearrangement. So it's important to know if they've developed a MYC rearrangement, which would be consistent with a double hit or high-grade B-cell lymphoma. And you can check out our diffuse large B-cell lymphoma series for a little bit more detail on that. Not all transformed follicular lymphomas to DLBCL will have that MYC rearrangement, and some can be cured with R-CHOP chemotherapy. What's interesting is that patients who receive R-CHOP for treatment of their transformed follicular lymphoma can often have a relapse of the indolent component of the lymphoma years later. Remember, things that grow kind of slowly can be more difficult to fully eradicate. PET scans are incredibly useful in understanding which patients might have higher risk follicular large B-cell lymphoma or transformation to large B-cell lymphoma. We're looking at sort of the difference in how avid these lesions are. So low SUV lesions, lesions that have an SUV of less than 10, in the absence of significant adenopathy or symptoms, they're unlikely to have underlying follicular large B-cell or transformation. So if a core biopsy has already been obtained, that's likely to be adequate. Double-digit SUVs, so greater than 10, that definitely pushes you more towards worrying that there could be a more high-grade or aggressive component. And so you need to push more for an excisional biopsy in those cases to rule out an underlying transformation.
Yeah, Dan, I think all of this is really important when we think about these patients. And we're about to wrap up the episode here because we just wanted to provide a scaffold and introduction of follicular lymphoma. And I want to highlight a couple things that you said. So we think about this. This will have a treatment, then it goes into remission, then eventually it relapses, and it has this roller coaster course that keeps on going. And each subsequent relapse has a shorter remission duration afterwards that we know historically. And that makes it really challenging when the patient relapses early. And one of the biggest prognostic markers that we see are patients who progress within 24 months of their initial therapy. We'll talk about this in our next episode, but I want to introduce it now. Progression of disease within 24 months of treatment, within 2 years of treatment, is one of the biggest poor prognostic factors in follicular lymphoma. So it's really important to remember that. The second thing, and one of the things that you mentioned, is that patients who have a transformation to large B-cell lymphoma on their PET scan often have double-digit SUVs. It's one thing to always remember, high SUVs, double-digit. Really think about that excisional biopsy. You should really have a clinical suspicion for transformation. And when you treat them, what happens in many cases is that you actually have divergent evolution. So meaning you started out with a follicular clone, it picked up a mutation, And then it split. You had some that were these large cell transformed clones, and then you had the regular indolent clone left in the background. So when you give R-CHOP, you cure the large cell clone. That part of the evolution tree, you cut off that branch. But your underlying indolent follicular lymphoma, you can't cure, and it will relapse. And that's very, very common. So it's important when you see the patient to give them that little expectation. Hey, your follicular might relapse, but you know what? We can watch that thing in many cases. And again, we're going to get to the fact that you don't always need to treat follicular lymphoma when it's there. And that's really going to be what we're going to talk about, the frontline management, observation versus treatment, the relapse refractory setting, what do we do? How are bispecific antibodies and cellular therapies coming into play? So really, really excited to get into this series.
That was such a good summary, and I think a great segue into what this series is going to be all about. I'm really, really excited to debut this to our listeners, and I think they're going to find it super helpful. And for what it's worth, it'll be nice to be able to compare and contrast this to how we manage DLBCL, which we've already talked about. So a lot of important pearls that we've shared on this first intro episode. So guys, I think that wraps up another fantastic episode of The Fellow on Call. So until next time, we'll see you all later.
See you later.
Peace.